From theunce.com, this is the Unce Podcast. Featuring artist interviews, unreleased tracks, and previews of the biggest events in electronic music. Available every week at theunce.com. It's not a party party, it's not a mad machine.
Funky that you want to listen to. It's not a party party, it's not a soundboard. Hello and welcome to the Unce Podcast. I'm your host, Anand Harsh. Yesterday, you heard the first installment of my interview with guitarist and producer Ryan Burnett from the Livetronica duo Signal Path. The new Signal Path album, Imaginary Lines, comes out tomorrow. The Unce has already announced that we're giving away two tickets to Signal Path's Portland show on September 18th. Stay tuned for another big announcement. Before we go on, I'd like to thank a few people for making Lotus's Summer Dance memorable. Brendan Pester, Jesse Miller, and Chuck Morris from Lotus. Jason Han of Iodo, Daniel Nista, Angry Paul, Pablo Felix, and especially Hector. The guys of Arch Nemesis also have an album coming out tomorrow. Make sure you check that out, and we'll have them on the program soon. Okay, let's get to the second part of my interview with Ryan Burnett of Signal Path. Now, I don't know if you want to talk about this or not, but you took a break for a couple of years. Can you tell me about why that break became inevitable, and then, you know, maybe how you were able to come back, and what made you come back to touring and playing a Signal Path?
Yeah, sure. No, I'd love to talk about that. Looking back on it, I feel like I can really sort of, and I've had enough time to kind of process it, where I feel like I have a pretty good perspective on kind of what happened, what led up to it, and where we are now. And, you know, essentially, to make a long story short, you know, we had 5 band members who were living in a bus with a total of about 10 people, plus maybe 2 dogs, give or take, you know, living on the road. And we were so passionate about what we were doing and so in love with what we were doing and just having so much fun. You know, I mean, it was our dream come true. We were a band touring on the road nationwide, getting to play the biggest festivals in the nation, and really just having fun. And, you know, we were working and working and working constantly to just be better and improve what we were doing. And I think essentially we got to a point, you know, our last real show that we played together as a 5-piece was in front of about, you know, 16,000 people at Bonnaroo.
Wow.
You know, and I have a recording of that that's out, you know, I guess you can download it from archive.org. And the energy is just insane. It's just like, it's electric. It's just overwhelming. You know, it's totally insane. And I think in a lot of ways, that was kind of the pinnacle of that version of the project, where after that happened, you know, I don't want to speak for my other band members who, you know, continue to this day to be just, you know, our family and our best friends. But I, you know, essentially what I feel happened is I think we kind of just were like, all right, so we did it. You know, we're done, you know, and I feel like, you know, I think the members in a lot of ways, you know, there was definitely no disagreements or any type of heated thing. I mean, we were all best friends, you know, I mean, like I said, we continue to be, and the way that it was presented was kind of like from each band member, it was kind of one at a time over the course of the next, you know, couple months. It was kind of like, you know, I think I want to move to Portland and pursue this other thing that I think is cool, you know, and if someone else, and, you know, I think I want to move over here and pursue this. And mm-hmm. It's just like, and, you know, it was kind of like, awesome. It was like, that's great. And, you know, after a couple months of kind of just absorbing the fact that like, wow, we were just living in a school bus for 5 years with 10 people playing almost every night of the week. We were just tired, you know, we were tired. And I feel like a lot of the members were just kind of like, you know, I think I want to do other interesting things. You know, you only live once, and that was awesome, and I want to pursue other things. And the things that the other members have been pursuing are pretty awesome. And, you know, and essentially after that happened, you know, it wasn't like we were in a big rush to be like, oh, let's throw these new random band members into the project and keep going. You know, it just didn't feel right. You know, we had a lot of people that were interested in playing with us. And in fact, we did, you know, several auditions from people all over the country, and it just didn't feel right, regardless of how technically good they were or how cool of people they were. It just didn't feel right. And so what we opted to do was nothing, You know, we just kind of hung out. I continued to produce music. I had a pretty awesome studio, pretty big spread in Missoula, and I continued to produce. And so I got an offer from a band called the Numa Trio. So I got offered to tour with them. And so I went out on the road for another year with that band, and we got to do some awesome things together. We toured Japan for a month. And I think kind of towards the end of touring with Numa, I was kind of having another realization, which was, wow, you know, this is great. This is fun. The music is awesome. These are very talented musicians, and they're really great people. But it just isn't as fun when you're not doing it with your best friends.
Yeah, I can understand that.
You know, and I'd say now that me and, you know, the Numa guys have history, you know, I consider them good friends. But at the time, I felt more like a hired gun, so to speak.
An outsider or just a studio musician?
Yeah, kind of, you know, I mean, to some degree. And it just wasn't, I was like, man, this is cool. I get to travel the world and do awesome things. And but it just didn't feel right, you know. And so I decided to step back from doing that and, you know, continually producing. I released a record, a solo record, you know, really always enjoyed and continue to this day, just enjoyed making music. And so that really never stopped for me. I moved to Colorado. I got married. I had a son. And when I found out that I was going to be having a boy, which we were, you know, it wasn't like an unplanned thing.
Right.
That was another realization. I was like, wow, we're bringing another human being into this world. And there was this sort of conviction, so to speak, where I felt that it was almost my duty as a future dad that I need to be setting the example that on this earth, on this planet, that you do what your dreams are. And I felt really motivated to pursue music again, more as a career and less as a hobby. And, you know, throughout that time, Signal Path continued to get offers for shows. We just had to pretty much turn them all down. And so, you know, Damon was living in Portland at the time, and we recall we had a phone conversation. We were like, let's take some offers. Let's do some shows at Signal Path, you know, live PA or whatever, and see how it goes. And kind of started easing back into it because we didn't want to, you don't want to dive right into something before
right.
You know what it's going to be like, because it had been, you know, almost 2 years. And so, yeah, let's do this with an open mind and see what happens. And, you know, I feel like the response has just been overwhelming. You know, people, you know, for all I know, we could have gone out on the road and people could have just been like, oh, who's Signal Path? And I don't know, some new band or whatever. But that's not what we got at all. You know, we got people just overwhelmingly saying like, oh my gosh, we're so stoked you're playing again. We can't wait to hear your music. Are you going to play this song? You can play that song. And it was encouraging, to say the least, you know, to know that, hey, we put something out there, and it's out there, and it's still alive. And it just really kind of helped drive the project further into, you know, where we are now, which is, you know, we're releasing this album September 1st. And I've never been happier in my life. It's just been so fun. I've just been having a blast making this music. And I feel like it's where it always needed to be.
Signal Path's album Clash right here on the UNS podcast. So let's go ahead and talk about that new album that's coming out on September 1st, Imaginary Lines. First of all, how long have you been working on this record?
We began production on Imaginary Lines in June. Early May, mid-May about we started. Yeah, we've been doing all sorts of interesting experimental stuff. I probably have 50 songs that we've thrown together and worked on, and I think only maybe eighth of them are going to make it on the album.
What's the message that you're trying to convey with this album, your overall artistic vision? What's the big cohesive element that is, you know, holding these eight tracks together?
The overarching concept behind Imaginary Lines essentially is I really wanted to exemplify the imaginary lines that we draw in our minds about, first and foremost, music, and this kind of music, and that kind of music, and this kind of a beat, and that kind of a beat, and sort of blur those lines together, and kind of just shed light on the fact that they are imaginary lines, whether, you know, it's reggae, or bluegrass, or hip-hop, or drum and bass, or dubstep, or, you know, house, or whatever it may be. And then, you know, just taking that a little bit deeper, just kind of the, all of, kind of lines that everybody puts up around themselves, just socially, the difference between this person and that person, and just kind of trying to question that and maybe just sort of play around with the idea that those are imaginary lines and that they can be broken. The cover art for our album is like a pack of wild animals busting out of the asphalt on like a city street. You know, I have stuff from pedal steel guitar, mandolin, acoustic guitar, synthesizers, you know, a whole realm of stuff that I really tried to incorporate this whole idea of just breaking those imaginary lines that are in our heads. And, you know, it could be anything from a line that says, hey, I'm this type of a person, so I'll never be able to do that. Or this is the kind of music that I like, so I'm not going to listen to that. Or, you know, you can kind of expand the idea from there. But just kind of trying to raise that level of connectivity up, I suppose, and also trying to do, and I think when those lines are erased, that's where awesome things happen, especially creatively. For example, there's a song on the record called Mystery of the Yeti, and one of the things that I did to sort of challenge my creative process on this song is I collected animal sounds, all types of diverse animal sounds from all over, and decided that I was going to write a drum beat only using animal sounds. And it turned out amazing. And it just kind of like, I mean, I had so much fun making it. I mean, people might hate it, I don't know. But I thought it turned out so well, and I had so much fun making it. And then to incorporate that into, you know, the album and everything else, I felt like really sort of was a microcosm of the whole concept of the album, which is just taking two things that you think are different and making them one.
Yeah. Well, it's very refreshing that you have, you know, an entire concept behind this album as opposed to just taking your eight best tracks that you've been writing over the past few months. I like to hear that.
We just automatically line up.
That's a world premiere broadcast of Verbal Yes from Signal Path's new album, Imaginary Lines. Let's wrap up my interview with Ryan Burnett.
For the producers out there who enjoy nerding out on this type of thing, you mentioned that you're not using Reason anymore. Is there a new piece of gear or a new program that you've brought into your arsenal that has become just like a go-to thing that you really like the sounds you're getting with it, or you like the ability to do this or that with it? I don't know if there's something that you've brought into your studio. You said you've got a nice spread. I don't know if there's anything that you can hip some of our producers out there to.
Yeah, man. My main workstation right now is Logic, with, you know, a lot of native instruments and Spectrasonic plugins. And then, of course, the live show is ported over from Logic and then basically reproduced. And I don't mean like remade. I mean, literally, it's like produced again for a live show in Ableton Live.
Okay.
But I definitely, you know, this, the whole contrast thing is what really gets me going creatively. So I definitely keep mandolins, banjos, pedal steel guitars, acoustic guitars, accordions, outboard gear, and stuff like that available and readily and easily available to just sort of mix stuff up. You know, I've been going a lot to Spectrasonic's Omnisphere a lot. I've been enjoying using that, but I really like to mix that up with, like, you know, like I said, accordions and other stringed instruments around the studio. And I think that really helps give it a, just, it maybe keeps it interesting and keeps it fun.
Like, I can't tell you enough that we're excited about this new album. It's coming out on September 1st and it's free. And your last album was free. What is the impetus behind giving away your music? Are you a Buddhist? Do you have no needs for the pleasures of earth? Or do you have some other reason for just, you know, spreading it out there?
Our intention is to get our music out there. And that's all we've ever wanted to do. And right now, you know, it's not necessarily free because we ask for an email address. We don't spend all of our time blasting out to these email addresses. We'll maybe send you one email to just let you know when we're coming to your town to play. So in that sense, it's not entirely free because we value that contact and we value that information from our fans. And so really for us, it's kind of, we want our music to be heard. In this day and age right now, it's not going to make a big difference whether we sell it or not to us. You know, we're poor. That's how we're going to be. I'm not too worried about that or focused on that. But what's going to make a difference is to our fans. If we give away our album for free, we're going to have thousands and thousands and thousands of people downloading this. And whereas when we sell it, you know, who knows what that would be like.
Mm-hmm.
And really, when it's free, I get even more excited about that because it really, in the same way that not going to school to play guitar keeps guitar fun. When you make an album that's free, it makes making the album fun. Like if someone doesn't like his music, sweet, it's cool. Money back guarantee.
Yeah.
You know? And I had a blast doing it. And so it really kind of gives this interesting dynamic when you're making it. That's like, you know, we're getting this album away for free. Let's, you know, it's like we're not spending hundreds of thousands of dollars to make this album. It's more like hundreds and hundreds of hours of my time,
mm-hmm.
where I get to have fun. And I don't want to charge for that. I think a lot of people kind of missed the whole thing. The reason why people are, you know, the cost of music was going up so much, the production of it was going up so much. You know, you'd have bands spending millions of dollars to make an hour of music. But hell yeah, they're going to charge $20 a CD.
Yeah.
And then kind of feels like everyone's kind of adapted that. Of course, the musicians got to make their living and all this and that. But, you know, we didn't spend thousands and thousands of dollars making this record. And hopefully we'll never have to spend thousands and thousands of dollars to make a record.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, so in that regard, it really kind of, it's something that we enjoy doing. We truly love doing this and we love sharing it with people. And we feel so blessed that we can do it for free.
When this album comes out September 1st, what's next? You got a big fall tour lined up?
Yeah, we got a pretty big fall lined up. We got about 40 shows. We're going to be touring with some pretty awesome producers, anywhere from Blockhead, some Ninja Tune, to EPROM, all sorts of great cities and great events coming up. And we're just going to be out there playing our music and having fun, meeting awesome people and cranking some tunes.
That sounds great. Ryan Burnett, thank you so much for being on the UNS podcast.
Yeah, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us, man. It's fun.
Well, that's going to close the books on this week's double episode with Ryan Burnett of Signal Path. I'd like to thank Ryan and Damon Metzner for setting this up and making their tracks available for download. Imaginary Lines goes live in just a few hours at signalpathmusic.com. Check out theunce.com to win tickets to the September 18th Portland show. And this just in, we're offering 2 tickets to the Signal Path show at the Roxy in LA. That's on September 25th. Go to theunce.com to sign up for a chance to win. Zion Rock, Godshot and Russ Randolph of Boombox will be my guests on the UNS podcast next week. Boombox released an album, Downriver Electric, a couple of months ago, and they're in the midst of their fall tour. Remember to visit theunz.com for news, artist profiles, and tour dates from across the electronic music spectrum. And go ahead and subscribe to this podcast on iTunes. If you have any questions, comments, or complaints about the program, or you'd like to be a guest on the Unz podcast, contact me at anand@theunz.com. Catch you next week.